Welcome to Arts Waves, the Monday edition of Cover to Cover. I'm Richard Walensky. My guest is Jason Minidakis, who is the artistic director of Marin Theater Company and also directs several of the plays. And we'll be talking about the past season and the upcoming season and other issues involving theater. I'd like to start by talking a little bit about that younger people don't seem to get theater. I know that all of the theater companies are doing something about it, but what do you think is really going on there?
I don't know that young people don't get theater so much as I'm not sure theater is aimed at their interests quite the way that it is aimed at an older generation's interests. One of the things we're trying to do here at Marin Theater Company is we now have multiple theater series that we're producing every year. One is for adults, and then two of them are actually for children, young adults, actually. So we've started trying to do plays that are aimed a little bit more at a younger generation. Last year, we actually did a play where we had a 17-year-old on stage. And the number of younger people that came to a play where a younger person was on stage, we were really surprised at the demographic shift that we had. And I think it's important that, you know, theater companies and producers really think about showing more young people and subject matter that concerns young people if they really want younger people in their audience. Otherwise, you know, we're going to have to wait until the audience is reflected by what's on stage for them to start coming, I think. I think that's a big problem we have. I also think that younger generations, the way they're entertained is different than the way older generations are entertained. And I think they receive their information in different ways. And theater's trying to do a better job of catching up to the way other arts forms are working and trying to work at a faster pace. But we do have to be careful that we don't abandon the audiences that we have right now while we're trying to chase down new audiences as well. So I think there's a juggling act, and we're trying to handle it by actually having different series that we're offering for different age groups.
I look at plays like, for instance, last year The Magic did Bad Jews, and right now Custom Made is doing This Is Our Youth, and ACT did Mr. Burns, and I guess you did Choir Boy, and upcoming My Mañana Comes, and all of these seem to be a little bit more geared toward interests of people who it's time for them to start learning about theater.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, you bring up an interesting point with My Mañana Comes. There are some other things we're doing this year that I think are attractive to different age ranges. Certainly in The Oldest Boy, the puppetry of having a young child that's actually portrayed by a puppet, that's interesting, I think, to younger people. We've certainly been seeing that in our audiences. I think another thing that theaters have to be really aware of is that young people see the world as being much more diverse than older audiences do. And I think theaters that are doing a more diverse range of programming, both in terms of the people that are being shown on stage and the stories, where the stories are coming from, I think a more global perspective is more attractive to a younger audience. I think theaters that tend to stick to a very small topic range, I think, are going to have trouble getting younger audiences in because, you know, younger people are looking at the world as a much, much smaller place. I think you have to be much more global in your perspective if you want younger people coming in.
Is that something in the back of your mind, along with just general diversity, that you're looking at for plays?
Yeah, I mean, it's something we think about all the time. We're constantly looking for plays that have younger people in them and have a much wider range of diversity. I'm programming a much more diverse season than we've ever had at this company, at least for the past few years, partly because the most interesting stories that I'm finding are actually coming from playwrights of diverse backgrounds. I'm much more interested in plays that take me away from my everyday life and my everyday circumstance. So I think that's reflected in the work that we're programming here. And we're very lucky in Marin and with the audiences that travel to us across the bridges, they seem very interested in going to different places and different time periods and taking different types of journeys and not necessarily staying in their comfort zones. So we've been programming wider and wider in terms of diversity and also in the content that our plays offer.
Let's look a little bit, Jason Minidakis, at the last season. I'm going to go a little out of order here, I guess. The Convert by Danae Guerrera, that was definitely taking place in different times and places than we are. How did that go over, you think, a play about Africa?
It went really well. It was one of our best sellers last year. It's been one of the better sellers that we've had over the past couple of years. It was about the founding of the country that eventually became Zimbabwe. At the time, it was the birth of Rhodesia. Audiences really responded to the material. It was in multiple languages, so that was kind of interesting. We expected to have a bigger challenge with that play than we actually ended up having from our audiences. It sold very well, and the content, I think people were very interested in watching how another country was brought into creation in terms of the similarities and differences of our own country. And I think that was something that was talked about often in the question and answer sessions that we had, because we do them for every performance. And with The Convert, we were actually also doing a pre-show lecture. We were having a lot of conversation about the birth of that country and that area and the conflict that went into birthing that country, the colonialism that was going on and the rebellion that was happening within the native population. It was an entirely different story for our audience, but at the same time, I think it was interesting for them to see a story that was so removed from themselves, but a story that nevertheless they found connection to in very personal ways, which was very exciting.
You mentioned having a pre-show discussion. How important is it for an audience to know what they're walking into?
I think it depends on the play. I think any good play that you're going to program, the audience doesn't need to know anything going into it. I think some plays, some advance information perhaps gives a chance for the person to receive difficult information quicker. We certainly did the pre-show lectures with Convert because we wanted to give a little bit of background on the area that we were going to be talking about so that the audience knew where in Africa we were, so that they understood some of the very quick references that are made right off the top in terms of the different backgrounds some of the people had in the play, the characters. We wanted to make sure they knew what those backgrounds were and had more than was in the play. I don't think it necessarily changed the amount of understanding that they had after seeing the play, but I think it may have changed their ease with which they entered into the world right at the very beginning.
You had three plays that dealt with African-American issues in very white Marin. How did that go over?
Went really well. It was one of our best seasons. It was really great. We started with Will Powers, Fetch Clay Make Man, which was about the friendship between Stephen Fetchit, the movie actor, and Muhammad Ali. And then the second African-American pinned work that we had was The Convert by Denai Guerrera. And then we closed it out with Terrell McCraney's The Choir Boy. And we were very conscious of having three plays by African-American writers, partly because they're all such young writers, and that was very exciting to us. They were three stories that had very, very different scopes. We also really liked that Fetch Clay Make Man and Choir Boy had a lot of relation between the two of them, in the sense that the events that were taking place in Fetch Clay Make Man were some of the events that the kids were studying in Choir Boy. Choir Boy is a completely contemporary story, and it was about students in an all-black high school in the South, and they were studying things that were happening in the 60s. So the civil rights events that were happening in Fetch Clay Make Man, the kids were studying in Choir Boy, and we really liked how those two plays bridged together and began and ended our season. We thought it was a really interesting conversation for our audience to have.
In terms of casting calls, is it easier or harder to get African-American actors?
It's not really different from any other production that we're doing. You look for the most options you can possibly have for every single role. We're casting both locally and nationally for all the plays that we do. We do our best to cast as locally as possible, and we did a really great job, I think, with all of our shows last year of seeing as many actors from our region as we possibly could and casting as many as we could. There were some really specific demands on us with shows last year and in the current year. When you mix musical and singing and acting and being able to speak different languages, there's lots of different things that come into play, and we've got a very strong casting department, and they go out of their way to make sure we're seeing as many local actors as we possibly can. But then we also have a very strong national network, both of theaters and artists that we work with, that we have worked with in the past, and that we hope to work with in the future. So we can do a fairly easy casting call in New York City, in Washington, D.C., in Chicago. and we've got artists in those communities who we've worked with before who can help us reach out and find the type of artists that we're looking for the different productions.
The other two shows, Jason Minidakis, well, there were three shows, The Whale, which I very much enjoyed, but the other two, History of Comedy and Way West, did not, at least for me, work quite as well as the shows we've talked about. Is that a general audience reaction?
I don't know if it was a general audience reaction. The Reduced Shakespeare Company was here doing the Complete History of Comedy, and that was actually our second bestseller of the season. So I wouldn't say that they necessarily agreed with you on that. We certainly had a lot of people come and see the show. That was the 10th anniversary of the RSC, and of course they were created here in Marin, and those guys still have homes here. So we were really interested in working with them and having them as a part of our community be able to do their new show in a theater that they consider in their home area. That was a partnership that we've been exploring for a while, and we were really excited to have them over the holidays. It was a great change of pace for our audience in terms of what we program. The Way West was a second production of a play that won our Sky Cooper New American Play Prize. The playwright was Mona Mansour, and she's a very important new voice in the American theater. The play was one that we had been developing with the Playwright Center up in Minneapolis, and the associate artistic director there, Haley Finn, was actually one of the people who had been developing the play with Mona and our director of new play development, Margot Melkon. So that's a play that we had been working on for quite a while. It's a piece that was very much about the financial collapse of 2008 and what happened to a lot of people in depressed areas. For instance, the play itself sort of takes place in the Modesto-Stockton region. You know, one of the things that we found in talking to people was that people were very uncomfortable seeing a play about the sort of things that they're very, very frightened of. So, you know, it hit very close to home that it was a play that was set in California that was taking place during the financial collapse and where people were losing, you know, in danger of losing their home and losing their jobs, and that we had a lot of feedback that that was a very tough subject matter for people to sit and watch and to wrestle with. So it was interesting. It continued a conversation of economic inequality that happens in the different social strata that we're dealing with in America and what happens with people who are living right on the poverty line when we have an overall financial recession. I think it was an important play for us to do. There were very important conversations that came out of it, and it continued a conversation that we had started with In the Red and Brown Water, Good People by David Lindsay-Abaire, and a few other plays where we were really looking at the differences between people who have a much more comfortable lifestyle and people who are working to make ends meet on a daily basis.
When you talk about conversations between previous seasons, is this something that most audiences even recognize?
I think they do here because we talk about it so much. You have to have an ongoing conversation with your audience, I think, to have these sorts of long-standing and overarching conversations. But for the 10 years, I guess, now that I've been here, we have done Q&As for every performance except on Saturdays when I guarantee my artistic staff they don't have to be here, and then on opening and closing performances. So normally we do 29 to 32 performances, and I would say 25 of those have talkbacks after them, question and answer sessions with the audience and members of our artistic staff, and often members of the artistic team, the cast that they just saw on stage. So when you have that sort of very long series of conversations with almost your entire audience, I think they do begin to stitch things together and they do begin to understand that there's a broader conversation that's being had over a number of seasons. And we're hearing that. We are definitely hearing the overarching conversations that are happening about the African-American work that we've been doing. We're certainly hearing it with the August Wilson plays that we've been doing. The new playwrights that we've been doing, the new American playwrights, people are really seeing the connections between those plays. When we did Q&As for The Way West, we were definitely fielding questions and comments about the parallels between that play and Good People and between that play and In the Red and Brown Water. And it's really fascinating when those conversations really start heating up. And you can even think forward into the next season that you're currently planning, which is what we're doing now, about the conversations that you're having on a nightly basis with your audience. It's something we're looking at the moment, and it's something that we hope to continue to foster with our audience and to keep it going.
You mentioned the following season. How many plays are set for that season, the one after the one we're going to be talking about?
Nothing is set at the moment for the 2016-2017 season, which is our 50th. very exciting. But we have a number of things that are in the fire, and a lot of different plays are secured, and we're talking about when they're going to land. So nothing is definite at the moment, but there are a lot of things that could become definite very quickly, depending on how pieces fall together. That season will pretty much be set by late January, mid-February, and we'll know where we're headed. But we have a good idea right now, but it's still a big jigsaw puzzle that we're putting together.
Well, I noticed for this season, three of the plays didn't even make their New York premiere until last fall.
There are a lot of plays in this season. The Oldest Boy, this, I believe, is only the second production of it. And we worked really closely with Sarah on both the artist selection and the design team. It was super exciting to have Jessica Thebus here, who is one of Sarah's longtime collaborators in Chicago. Jessica has directed all but two of Sarah's plays, and many of them have been either world premieres or regional premieres of her work. So it was exciting to have her get a chance to do this play out here with us. And we were working with Tsering Dorji, who is one of the only Tibetan artists working in the professional theater in America. And he is the only artist who's been part of both the world premiere production and this production, and he's been an invaluable asset to creating this play and to connecting us to the Tibetan community and Buddhist community in the Bay Area. He's been an absolute joy to have on stage as well, because he's quite a talented individual. And that was a connection that we made through Sarah, which was another benefit of getting to do the play. And some of the other plays that we're doing this year, we're doing quite a few West Coast premieres. So, you know, it's the first time the play is being done on this coast. And a lot of these plays are pretty much fresh out of the box, which is really great. It's super exciting to be that much on the edge of what the American theater is creating.
The Oldest Boy originally started at Lincoln Center last November. And as you mentioned, Sarah Rule was actually here working. It's the story of a boy who is the reincarnation of a Tibetan Lama. The actors playing the Lamas, they seem like real Lamas.
Sarah's writing is really amazing, and it really gives the audience a real understanding of what those teachers are like. And the actors were very lucky that they were able to work with the material, and also have Tsering, who was able to introduce us and bring in quite a number of teachers in the area who were able to really give the actors a sense of who these teachers are and what their personalities like. So it was a very exciting process for us, and the actors are really quite amazing. Jin Kim is from New York and is a member of the Labyrinth Theater Company, and he plays one of the Lamas, and he's an amazing actor. We're very lucky to have him. And then Wayne Lee plays one of the monks, and he's a local actor here from the Bay Area, and he's another very, very kind, open, generous spirit. And they took to these roles really quickly. I think they bring some real authenticity to what we're doing.
It's a play that follows through on how a mother is going to respond, finding out her three-year-old son is the reincarnation of Tibetan Lama. My only objection to it, and I'm wondering if Sarah had any comment about it, was something that the New York Times said, which is the air of gentle reasonableness renders the play a little flat in dramatic terms, meaning that there's never a question that he may not be a Lama.
No, I think the question is, what's going to happen to this family, and what are the parents going to decide to do? And I don't think that's ever, you're ever fully sure of what their decision's going to be until it actually happens. And even during some of the different ceremonies that happen over the course of the play, I think there's always a little bit of a question as to whether or not these parents are going to be able to make the tremendous sacrifice that's being asked of them to allow their very young child to study in an entirely different country in a monastery. A lot of people feel like there's not enough what I would call Western conflict in the play, which is a very masculine conflict. And I think that's one of the interesting things about the Bay Area is we don't have nearly enough female critics. So, you know, a lot of the critical reception that this play has received both in the Bay Area and also in New York has been all at the hands of male critics. I do think when you've got a play that was created by a female playwright and has such a center that is so based on motherhood and based on what it is to be a mom, I mean, it's a shame that we don't have any critical reception from women in the power of a critical voice in any of the major media to be able to say what their opinion is of the piece, that it's all coming from men. I certainly hear your objection. I would disagree with it entirely, but, you know, that's why we do these things, so we can have these conversations.
As a friend of mine, a female friend who came with me to the show, said it's probably the clearest distillation of the story of how a Rinpoche comes to exist that she'd ever seen.
Yeah, it's something else. And the neat thing about it is, and one of the reasons I was so interested in the play, the subtitle of the play is A Play in Three Ceremonies. Sarah has created a theatrical piece that is the fusion of what we think about as being a contemporary Western play with three very Eastern ritualistic ceremonies, and also has created a narrative flow that is much gentler, as we talked about a minute ago. The conflict of it, it's not a super strong conflict. It's more of a gentle emotional conflict. And I think it's a very different type of storytelling. And I think people who see it have a very different experience of being in a play, certainly for the type of work we normally do at Marin. You know, we recognize how different this piece is from other pieces that we produce. That's one of the reasons we were so excited about doing it. The amount of dance and the amount of music that's in it, and the time that's given for reflection of the decisions that the characters have to make, I think is something that only a true theater magician like Sarah Rule could actually write and still contain within a 2-hour envelope. It's really pretty spectacular.
Jason Mendodakis, the next play, My Mañana Comes, by Elizabeth Irwin, Bay Area premiere, another show that began last fall in New York at Playwrights Realm. How did you find out about My Mañana Comes?
I know the playwright's agent, and she told me about the piece, and actually our managing director, Michael Barker, went and saw the play. And a friend of mine, Che Yu, was the director on the piece, so I had a lot of ins to the play. Michael Barker, our managing director, loved the piece and came back and was super excited about it. Our director of new play development, Margot Melkon, read it and was very excited, thought it was a very different voice. We were very excited to have a young American writer. This was her first play. And to have four young men, the four men in the play are all in their 20s, and they're not the type of characters that you typically see in an American theater. They're four busboys. They're working together in a very upscale restaurant in New York City. One of them is African American, one is Mexican American, and two are undocumented workers from Mexico. They form a very interesting but yet unstable alliance between the four of them, working between the back part of the restaurant and the front part of the restaurant. It's a very interesting piece that dives into how these young men make a living and what making a living and what the American dream is to them when they are so on the fringes of society. It's an interesting time to be doing this play when so much of the conversation on the national landscape with the upcoming presidential race is about what are we going to do with undocumented workers? What are we doing with people who are trying to enter the country to work, to find a new life? And I think this is a really interesting play to be doing at this time. We've cast some very exciting actors, some young actors from the Bay Area that I'm excited to see have some of their first professional experiences. Kirsten Brandt from the South Bay is going to be directing the play. She used to be the associate artistic director at San Jose Rep. And it's an exciting time to be doing this piece. And Elizabeth's going to be coming out with us, and she'll be here for a few days working on the play. We actually worked with her. We did a workshop of the play earlier this year to kind of help her finalize the script after the first production. And she's done some really amazing work on the piece, and we're super excited to see how audiences respond to it.
At this particular time, how far along are you on, say, sets?
The set is fully designed and it's currently being constructed. It started being constructed as soon as The Oldest Boy opened, so it should be pretty done. It's over at our shop space between Berkeley and Oakland, and in a big warehouse that we have over there. And we should be getting pretty close to having a set that if you went into our shop, you would pretty much be able to recognize what it's going to look like when it gets into our space on our stage.
For the next show, Gem of the Ocean, how far along is the set on that?
Actually, the set on that one is not even in the beginning stages of design, because we're going to be working in a very different way on that production. Our director, Daniel Alexander Jones, is not only a playwright and a director of what we would consider typical theater, he's also a performance artist and he's a solo performer. He's working with the designers to discuss concepts right now, but they're not actually going to begin to physicalize the ideas until they begin working in the room with the actors. We've got an amazing cast, including Margot Hall and Amazigh Eden-Henry, who are going to be coming in, and they're going to be working with Daniel. And we've pushed back our design deadlines for this production so that we can really come at this play from a fresh perspective. You know, that's one of the reasons why we've been so interested in pursuing the entire Century Cycle by August Wilson, is to give younger African-American artists and directors the chance to approach these texts who perhaps did not get a chance to work on them the first time around because they were, you know, we were the understudies and we were the assistants. We weren't leading the artistic processes at that point. Now that, you know, that generation of artists are now in leadership roles, we're coming at the plays with a bit more of an open mind in terms of thinking about the poetical power of August's writing and of his stories and seeing what we can create. So I think we're going to see a very different type of August Wilson production from this version of Gem of the Ocean than what people have experienced with August plays before.
Well, that play was originally 2003, set in 1904, so it's the first in the cycle, about a 285-year-old matriarch.
That's the role that Margot Hall will be playing. The role's been, you know, made famous by Felicia Rashad and a couple of other amazing artists, and we're very excited to have one of our treasures here in the Bay Area take on that role.
What is the play about?
The play is about a young man named Citizen who comes to Aunt Esther because he needs his soul washed. He has committed a crime that he can't bring himself to forgive himself for, and he comes to her for help in trying to understand both where he is in his life and what he's done and how he's gotten there. It's a beautiful play. In a lot of ways, it's the play that completely encompasses the entire Century Cycle, and it also encompasses the lifetimes that come before the Century Cycle even begins. Aunt Esther is 285 years old, so she is one of the people who was brought across on the slave ships, and she is a centerpiece to the Century Cycle, even though we don't see her, except in this piece. It's an exciting play to be doing because it's such a touchstone for the other 10 plays, and this will be our third August Wilson play, so we still have 7 to go, and we're very, very excited about getting to the very first one chronologically in terms of the storytelling.
The next play is world premiere, Swimmers by Rachel Bond's Slice of Life ensemble play.
Swimmers is a brand new piece. It's 11 actors, which for a world premiere is a very interesting size ensemble. The play takes place in an office building in an office park, and it starts in the basement at the beginning of an office day. One of the people who works in the building goes down to get some materials and bumps into another of the coworkers that are down there. And from there, each scene moves up one floor until the end of the day, at the end of the workday on the roof. And you meet 11 different people over the course of the day. Each floor is its own specific little play that's part of the greater tapestry of the play. And on some floors, you'll meet characters who are primary players in the story that you're seeing. And then on another floor, those primary characters will wander through and have a very small part to play in the story that's being told on that floor. It's a little bit like the structure of Love Actually, the movie. Tonally and subject-wise, it's entirely different. But the idea that you can have major characters in one storyline that are minor characters in another storyline, and you get to see the interconnectedness of all these lives in this office building, it's really pretty amazing. And it also has a little bit to do with the end of the world. It has a little bit to do with a man having his entire world fall apart and get rebuilt. It's a magical journey about the people that we know the best and the people that we know the least, the people that we're at work with every day. It's a beautiful new play that from a playwright who's going to be a very, very important American playwright.
And that's Rachel Bonds.
Rachel Bonds.
Next one is Anne Boleyn, which premiered at Shakespeare's Globe in England and actually went on tour in 2010. Anne Boleyn is a ghost talking to James the First, and it goes back and forth between her life and what comes afterward?
It does. It starts with Anne. Anne has a monologue with the audience to kind of welcome them into the theater, much like a lot of Shakespeare's plays do in terms of welcoming the audience into the story that's about to be told. And we do. We bounce back and forth between the time of James the First and Henry VIII. And it's very exciting storytelling because Brenton has taken a revisionist eye on the history of those two time periods. And to some degree, he's taken a bit of a feminist look at that time period. We get to find out how Anne ends up with Henry. We end up finding out how the divorce proceedings happen so that Henry ends up freeing himself and is able to marry Anne. We're there for the birth of Elizabeth, who will later become Queen Elizabeth. We are in James's period when James decides to have a new version of the Bible created. We get to see Anne have both political and religious influence on Henry VIII, and we get to see how Henry VIII makes the break with the Catholic Church and how he ends up creating the Church of England. It's a fascinating piece of theater, and we've got some amazing Bay Area artists in the play. Liz Sklar, Arwen Anderson, Craig Marker, Charles Shaw Robinson, Dan Hyatt, Howard Swain. It's a really great group of actors. It's sort of in the tradition of Bill Kane's Equivocation that we did back in 2010, in the sense that you're bouncing back and forth across time periods, and you're seeing a new version of the events that you think you know, and perhaps you don't.
How did you discover that one?
That was a commission that the Globe Theater had, and it ran for the Globe for two consecutive seasons. It wasn't intended to do that. The first season was so successful, they brought it back for a second year. I found out about it in its first run. Brenton is one of my favorite British writers. I first discovered him years and years ago with the Romans in Britain. I've followed his writing, and I've always wanted to do one of his plays, but never quite found the one that fit into our season. And this one has romance and history. It's a period piece, but one that can be looked at in a very contemporary lens. So it fit in really, really well to the season that we were putting together. And it had such great roles for local Bay Area actors that we couldn't resist putting it in. This is one of our biggest seasons ever in terms of the number of actors that are in the season. We have an 11-person world premiere. There are 10 actors in Anne Boleyn. There are 7 actors in Gem of the Ocean. There are 7 actors in The Oldest Boy. So it's a very big season for us.
How many actors were in Choir Boy?
7 as well. Yeah. That's a mid-sized cast for a lot of American plays, but it's a bigger cast for our size theater.
What's your maximum?
The biggest we've ever done here since I've been here has been 13. They've had bigger casts than that at this theater in our history, and we're looking at perhaps doing a play next year that would be even bigger than that. We've got the capacity to probably handle, I would say we could probably easily handle 20 to 24 actors on our stage, just in terms of the stage space that we have. But I financially wouldn't want to try to do that. But we'll see what the 50th season brings, because we got some surprises in store.
The last show is The Invisible Hand by Ayad Akhtar. 2014, another fall 2014 show, New York Theater Workshop, about a banker who is kidnapped and has to get together his own ransom. And he was played by Justin Kirk, who was in Weeds. Is that cast yet?
That play is cast. And we have, again, some great Bay Area actors. Craig Marker is in that play. We also have the return to the Bay Area of Tom Coach, who actually grew up in Mill Valley and went to Tam High. And then went on to have a career in theater in Washington, D.C. and New York. He's already had his Bay Area premiere at SF Playhouse in Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo, that a lot of people remember. He played one of the Hussein brothers in that play, and he's coming back to do that play with us. We also have Jason Kapoor, who's a local actor, and Barzan Akhavan, who has been a company member up the Oregon Shakespeare Festival for the past 3 or 4 years, is coming down to do that play with us as well. So it is completely cast, and we were really excited to have so many Bay Area actors in that production as well.
It looks like a fascinating play because it deals with the relationship of kidnapping in the Middle East and money.
It does. You know, that play actually has a much longer history. It was originally a one act that was done at a theater in St. Louis, I believe. And then the play got expanded into a 2-act play that had its first staging in Seattle at, I believe, ACT Theater. It's a fascinating play. It's a thriller. You're not going to know what's going on from moment to moment. It's really exciting to have a play in the theater that is that tense and where the audience really gets to get taken on a journey in terms of the story. It goes in some really fascinating directions, and you're never quite sure who to trust over the course of that play. It's quite a great ride, so it's a good way to end the season.
And that particular play, some of the themes are...
Money is one of the big ones. You know, it's about an American banker who's working in Pakistan who gets kidnapped off the streets for ransom, and then as soon as he's kidnapped, the organization, because they kidnap him, get put on a terrorist watch list. I mean, the minute that they're on that list, they can no longer be negotiated with. So the organization that this American banker works for can't negotiate for his release, nor can any other American organization negotiate for his release. So he ends up negotiating for himself, puts his own money up, and then offers to play the market to try to make up the balance of the ransom money. And you can imagine that that becomes very complicated as they start making money. When to stop becomes a real question for the people who have abducted him.
Almost sounds a little like the old movie Network in a way, where the radicals come in and wind up asking about residuals.
It's pretty interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting parallel.
Jason Minidakis, Marin Theater, why is it THEATRE instead of ER?
You know, it was that way when I got here, so I don't have a good answer for you. It's an interesting little thing in the theater, which way you go, is it ER or RE? And everybody has their own reasons for what they choose, but, you know, it's been 50 years since we picked our name, so I couldn't give you a very good answer on that one.
You also do a new play program, and you've got two commissions that are currently out, one about an Alice in Wonderland play and one about Thomas Jefferson?
We actually have three commissions out at the moment. One is with Amelia Roper for a new play for our family series, and that is a new interpretation of Alice in Wonderland. And Amelia's been working on that for a while now, and we're really excited to have that come in soon. We also have Thomas Bradshaw, one of our more provocative American playwrights. He currently has a play up in New York City called Fulfillment that I was actually able to see last week. He's writing a play about the relationship between Sally Hemings and Thomas Jefferson. That play is going to be a very interesting, big, sprawling epic about, you know, in Thomas's opinion, America's first blended family. You know, it's become pretty common knowledge that Thomas Jefferson did, in fact, have a sexual relationship with one of his slaves, Sally Hemings. Together, they had seven children. And the play is going to explore that. And knowing Thomas's sense of humor, he's probably going to have a very interesting take on it. We also have Martina Maya on commission right now as well. She won our David Colicchio Prize a few years ago, and she is currently on commission with a couple of theaters around the country, and she's the current Pony Fellow from the Lark Theater. So she's living in New York City this year, and she's working on a new female epic for us. She is the child of a Polish immigrant and is an immigrant herself and has a very interesting story to tell.
And what about you? You're directing a couple of shows next season?
I'm directing Anne Boleyn and The Invisible Hand, the last two shows, actually, back-to-back, which is going into our 50th season, an interesting scheduling decision on my part, but there you have it.
Are you doing anything outside of MTC directing?
I'm not. Right now, we've got so many things going right now in terms of the new plays that we're working on, that we're developing, and the plans for the 50th season have got us really, really busy here. So not many of our on-staff artists are working outside of the fold this year because we're so busy, both with this season, which, like I said, is our biggest, and planning for our 50th season, which promises to perhaps be even bigger.
You've been listening to an interview with Jason Minidakis, who is the artistic director of Marin Theater Company. The Oldest Boy by Sarah Rule plays through October 11th. The next play, My Mañana Comes, has its Bay Area premiere. Previews start on
October 29th, and then the official opening is November 3rd, and it will run through the end of November and hopefully over the Thanksgiving holiday.
For more information about these plays, you can go to marintheater.org. I'm Richard Walensky on Arts Waves.